Welcome to the Dean Show, and I'm here with Adrian. How are you doing, Adrian?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're at his farm. As you can see, we got these nice cows, and I want to turn you guys out to something incredible that probably, I don't know, it's been a little bit over a year, and I really got into this raw milk. Now, there's some misconceptions around it, and most people are really, who drink milk, many people become lactose intolerant, you know, they have all these allergies. Is that from drinking raw milk or pasteurized milk? What's the difference now? Many people have no clue. Can you help educate us?
So that's actually how we ended up in the raw milk to begin with. It's my oldest daughter, Emily, who owns the cows here with her youngest sister, Claire. She was diagnosed as lactose intolerant. So as a toddler, we went through ear infections and constipation and diarrhea and all those things, fevers and then antibiotics. And so she was diagnosed with either a milk allergy or lactose intolerance. Well, a Mennonite guy that used to shear sheep for me, we were talking about it one day at lunch, and he said, she's not allergic to milk, she just needs raw milk. Now, I had never really heard of such a thing, and I grew up on a farm, but I didn't grow up milking cows. And so several months later, he called me, and he had a heifer that was about to calve. And so he made me a deal I couldn't refuse and basically guilted me into buying this cow from her. And that's Precious. That's why they named it Precious Pastures. That was the name of our first heifer. And so when she calved, my wife made sure that the milk was safe for me to drink first, and then she and the kids would drink it. And my daughter Emily can drink raw milk, unpasteurized, unhomogenized milk all day, and it doesn't give her any health problems. To the contrary, it's health-giving to her. So there's a lot of people that have a lot of problems that, you know, if conventional pasteurized, homogenized milk is not working well for them, oftentimes raw milk will. And it's a misconception that, you know, the foods that we eat don't have any influence on our gut bacteria, all those sorts of things, you know, that I think, you know, I meet a lot of people that raw milk solves a lot of problems for.
This is the Dean Show. Take us back, Andrew, if you don't mind, in time. Early 1900s, they had the distilleries, and it was very filthy. People were getting sick, and they developed this concept now of killing the bad bacterias, and then it became a big industry now, right? And the difference between then, how it started, and the movement, the big raw milk movement now, the difference, because I was very, very scared to, you know, nervous. I thought I was going to get sick or something. But let's go back in time to how this whole pasteurization process started.
So you need to remember that as the what they call them brewery dairies, those were dairies that sprang up around breweries in the middle of pretty heavily populated areas. So they had all of this brewery waste that they needed to get rid of, or sometimes it's referred to as distillers. And so cows could eat that, and cows would produce milk on that. But cows, you know, for the first 9,000, 10,000 years, however long the cows have been domesticated, depending on what culture you're from, they'd never eaten distilled grains. You know, that wasn't something the cows had ever eaten. So they were filthy conditions. The cows were not healthy. You need to remember then they also didn't have stainless steel. They didn't have, bulk tank refrigeration. They didn't have cleanliness. So all of those things. You can certainly, in unhygienic conditions with any sort of a food product, you can certainly have problems. But those had inherent problems that, you know, once you got away from any unhealth in the cows, then you certainly got healthier milk. I mean, it's, you know, so tuberculosis in cows was a real thing. I mean, there are diseases that you have to watch out for in animals. And so you can influence that on the health of the animals, but you can also just through good husbandry, you know, and cleanliness and carefulness and refrigeration and stainless steel and all the sort of things that we have now that they didn't have then. But I would also argue, you know, when all of the Midwest farm people went off to fight in World War One, you know, these were some of the healthiest people on earth. You know, there was a reason, you know, why they were, you know, so inherently healthy.
These cows are very, very friendly. You see, we got, look. So tell us how when you go through the pasteurization process, I mean, like the Creator has given us, you know, this gift of food and how it was intended. I mean, back before 100 years ago, there was no such thing as pasteurization, was there?
And there was no such thing as refrigeration. So, you know, if you go back, to the land flowing with milk and honey, if you go back when they talk about in ancient writings of people eating curds and whey, you know, they talked about sitting and eating curds. If you came onto the earth, you know, 9,000 years ago, any milk that you had, especially in the Mediterranean areas or, you know, equatorial areas of the world, was already starting to turn towards sour. So, you know, you didn't drink cold milk in those temperate zones, you know. So when you ate curdled milk, that's full of all sorts of bacteria, like we would have in good bacteria that we would have in yogurts and stuff, that I would argue, you know, humans have evolved, for lack of a better term, at the same rate that as our agriculture has, and milk consumption and all of the, you know, cream and whey products and all these all came up at the same time.
Let's talk a little bit. Tell us, Adrian, what actually the process when you pasteurize the milk? There's so many. I mean, we can safely say that, I mean, milk is like a superfood. You mean, you got so many nutrients and vitamins and minerals and proteins. When you pasteurize it, do you destroy all that? What happens in the process?
Well, you can destroy them, or you can make them way less digestible. You know, the easiest milk to digest is, if you're going to drink milk, is actually warm milk that hasn't even been chilled yet. But then you can also clabber it. There are people that clabber it that never refrigerate it, so it's kind of going towards kefir, going towards yogurt. But pasteurizing and homogenizing, they're both, you know, pretty harsh processes on a pretty delicate product. You know, all of the good bacteria, all the probiotics, all the things that, you know, we as mammals and the mammals that we, you know, milk, you need all of those available fats and proteins and all those things that, you know, I would argue that the homogenization is really bad for the fat part, in that you get particles that are small enough to cause all sorts of gut problems. You know, it's my opinion that, you know, these diverticulitis problems, the Crohn's problems, and all these are at least exacerbated by pasteurized, homogenized milk. But also all the other things in our diet that are, you know, processed to take the goodness that, you know, 9 or 10,000 years of human evolution, you know, gut bacteria, all those sorts of things that we're missing out on. So all of a sudden we're having to add probiotics back into our diet, or we're on antibiotics all the time. And, you know, I would argue the same thing would take place in, you know, other young mammals that, you know, if they didn't have access to raw milk as well. So
isn't there enzymes in the milk that help you digest it?
Certainly. You know, if you take my test for people would be to find yourself some raw milk, put it in a glass on a counter, put a paper towel over it, but don't seal it so that it goes anaerobic, and take conventional pasteurized homogenized milk, set it next to the thing the same way. Your raw milk in several days will clabber, but you could mix it back up, and I've done this, you know, in 2 weeks, unrefrigerated, and it'll curd, and it's still tasty and digestible. Your pasteurized homogenized milk will rot. It'll putrefy because the enzymes that are in there that have been in there all along, they were put there in the beginning to make, you know, a milk, a movable thing that we could take with us, you know, 9,000 years ago, before refrigeration, and before, you know, if you think about it, pasteurization was available 9,000 years ago, right? You could have heated milk. It could have been done, but they didn't do it. because you didn't have a system where you had to have milk that would last for days or weeks or months, you know, and you ate as fresh a food as you could, and that's how it was.
Now let me talk about another point. If you take some of these cows that don't see the light of day, they're being fed foods that they're not made to eat, you know, corn and grains, and then they get sick, and then you got to pump them on antibiotics. And if you drink that milk needs to be pasteurized, right? That'll get you sick if you drink it. But I mean, the way that God Almighty intended for these animals that are humanely treated, that are out, you know, eating what God intended them for to eat in a good, clean environment like you have here. I mean, that's the kind of the milk that's safe.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you talk about the difference?
Oh, certainly. There are so cows that are milked specifically.
These dairy cows, many of them don't see the light of day, do
right?
They?
And they never have grass, and they don't eat much forage. So a cow, if you watch these cows, if they're not eating or resting, or in this case, they're kind of excited to see people, but when they're ruminating, they're adjusting their body pH. So a cow with a good-sized cow will have like a 50-gallon rumen. So that's meant to have roughage. I mean, the whole idea is they've got a four-chambered stomach. They're a ruminant. And so that actually buffers their system. So a cow like that has so much good bacteria on them that the bad bacteria can never get a foothold and really take over. But a cow... So we've taken cattle, and everybody's heard of mad cow disease and that sort of thing. Well, those are functions of what we feed cows. So, you know, cows are herbivores in general, would never eat each other, right? There's omnivores. There are, you know, we're omnivores, but there are animals that we eat that are omnivores that would eat other meat. Cows won't do that, but we force them into that situation because of cheap nutrition. So when they render dead animals and feed them, you know, whether it's to cattle or sheep or that sort of thing, you know, you're creating a situation that's unnatural, has never occurred, you know, in 10,000 years of agriculture, and it's definitely probably, you know, never meant to happen.
Misconceptions about Islam. Number 2, Muslim women are oppressed. One of the most disturbing misconceptions is the negative portrayal of women in Islam. Namely, that Islam degrades and oppresses women. This misconception is due to the negative culture and traditions that people all over the world still hold on to. Unfortunately, these traditions sometimes overshadow the Islamic teaching, and people from the outside believe that the traditions and Islam are the same when in reality, they are not. For example, women in pre-Islamic Arabia had almost no rights. They were viewed as objects and were constantly humiliated. Their purpose was nothing more than to obey men and have children for him. When a female baby was born, it was considered a disgrace to the family and they were often buried alive. Islam brought positive change to Arabia. People who embraced Islam had to let go of these harmful cultural practices, and women were finally given the rights and respect that they deserved. For every male convert to Islam today, 4 females convert to the religion. Nobody will convert to religion that oppresses them. The truth is that Islam provides women with the rights they deserve to be successful in this world and the next. Number 1, Muslims are terrorists and extremists. This is by far the biggest misconception of Islam, given unfairly by stereotyping and the public image that the media gives. Has anyone else noticed how when a specific group of people attack another group of people, it is labeled as a hate crime, but when a Muslim opens fire on anybody, it is quickly regarded as terrorism? Many political dictators and officials or extremist groups use the name of Islam as a strategy to gain followers and attention when many of their practices go against the teachings of Islam. Islam does not support terrorism under any circumstances. Terrorism goes against every principle in Islam, and if a Muslim engages in terrorism, he is not following Islam. Islam prohibits Muslims from attacking or killing any innocent person. Allah says, "Whoever kills a person unjustly, it is as though he has killed all mankind." In Quran chapter 5, verse 32.
Tell us one more thing, big business. I mean, after everything, the whole process got started, We see that, you know, this is actually, you know, bad for business that the raw movement starts to grow, but it is growing. People are waking and seeing that this is not how the Creator intended it, for it to be pasteurized and you kill all the good stuff in there, but raw milk, the way that it was for us, that's the way we want it. And there's a movement now, right?
Well, I hope there's a movement. It's my argument has been, and I've talked to every politician I could find in the state of Illinois and all the health department people I could find. But, you know, the trouble with an issue like raw milk is your small farmers, and you're only essentially dealing with people who really seek out their own food, so who take that responsibility. The difficulty on this issue in Illinois has been we have a two-party system in our government, and one party loves big business and the other party loves big government, and neither of them love individuals, you know, supplying a public with something that they want, but, you know, without an in-between. Like, I meet the most fascinating people, the best educated people, the most self-aware people that you'd ever meet selling raw milk. It's been an epiphany for me that you know, and the difficulty is that, you know, people that are the most passionate about what they eat and what they put in their body have the most trouble getting the government to acquiesce to let them do that. And that's a big frustration for me. It's a huge, I mean, I'm a fifth generation Illinois farmer. And, you know, my daughters would love to keep their cows and continue to do this. But, you know, it's kind of a race to see, you know, who wins out, I guess.
Here with Adrian, tell us if people want to visit you, your daughter's website, how can they, could they come out and see you here? Sure. At the farm?
So unfortunately, according to my wife, we milk cows twice a day every day. So the farm is at 387 South Malta Road in Rochelle, Illinois. I would ask you to call ahead and then also visit my daughter's website. It's preciouspastures.com. Precious, again, was the old original cow, and she was just a pearl of an animal. Just a joy to have around. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Subscribe right now.